Blog Talk Radio.
How many brothers fell victim to the street? Rest in peace, young nigga, as they have been forged. Be alive if I told you that I never thought of that. My nigga, we the last ones left. But life goes on. How many brothers fell victim to the street? Rest in peace, young nigga, as they have been forged. Be alive if I told you that I never thought of that. My nigga, we the last ones left. Life goes on. Halls, breath stinking in my drawers. Ring, 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 quiet y'all. Incoming call. Plus it's my homie from high school, he getting by. It's time to bury another brother, nobody cry. Life is a baller, alcohol and booty call. We used to do them as adolescents, we used to call. Raise the seat, loped out and blaze the weed. Get on the roof, let's get smoked out and blaze with me. 2 in the morning and we still high ass out. Screaming thugs till I die before I pass out. But now that you're gone, I'm in the zone, thinking I don't wanna die all alone. But now you're gone, and all I got left is stinking memories. I love them niggas to death, I'm drinking Hennessy while trying to make it last. I drank a fist for that ass when you pass, cause life goes on. How many brothers fell victim to the streets? Rest in peace, young nigga, there's a heaven for a G. Be a lie if I told you that I never thought of that. My nigga, we the last ones left. But life goes on. How many brothers fell victim to the street? Rest in peace, young nigga, there's a heaven for it. Be a lie if I told you that I never thought of death. My nigga, be the last one left. And life goes on. Yeah, nigga, I got the word as hell. You blue trowel and the judge gave you 25 with an L. Time to prepare to do fair time, won't be parole. Imagine life as a convict that's getting old. Plus with the drama, with looking out for your baby mama. Taking risks while keeping cheap chicks from getting on her. Life in the hood is all good for nobody. Remember gaming on dumb hotties at your party. Me and you know two or two. While scheming on hits and getting tricks that maybe we can slide in two. But now you worry, rest niggas, cause I ain't worried. Eyes blurry, saying goodbye at the cemetery. Though memories fade, I got your name tatted on my arm. So we both born to my dying day. Before I say goodbye, Kato and Mental, rest in peace. Thug till I die. How many brothers fell victim to the streets? Rest in peace, young niggas, as I have been for a G. I'd be a lie if I told you that I never thought of that. My nigga, we the last ones left. And life goes on. How many brothers fell victim to the streets? Rest in peace, young nigga, as I have been for a G. I'd be a lie if I told you that I never thought of that. My nigga, we the last ones left. Cause life goes on. Worry me smiling. My pocket, have a party at my funeral. Let every rapper rock it. Let the hoes that I used to know from way before kiss me from my hands and my soul. Give me a paper and pen so I can write about my life of sin. A couple of bottles of gin in case I don't get in. Tell all my people I'm a rider. Nobody cries when we die. We outlaws, let me ride until I get free.
Good evening, everybody, and thank you all for joining us this evening, taking time out of your busy days to join us this evening. I'm about to open up the chat room for those who are online, so if you have a question or comment, please put it in the chat room. Today, I know we talk about economics, and we talk about a solution to economics, and trust me, we're not steering off the topic and what we're doing because economic plays a big part in what is going on. But as a woman and as a mother and as a grandmother and as a godmother and as an auntie and as a friend and as a sister, it's a terrible life to live, to cut on the news, to see if someone in your family has been a victim of this outrageous gun violence. My nephew, Patrick, was killed last September for $17 and a cell phone. They shot him in the side and the bullet came out the top of his head. He had no chance of living, but he was 19 years old. And that's a life that will not go on. And that's children that are not being born So you killing off generations of a family when you take a life. And I think there's nobody better, nobody that I know that's better that can give us some statistics about what is going on in our society, what is causing the gun violence, and then lastly, what is the solution? And we have the solution. So I'm honored today to have Brother Smokey Phillips with us, who is a longtime server in the Houston community as a police officer, as an advocate, as a justice pursuer. Introduce yourself, Brother Smokey Phillips, and tell us a little bit about you.
Thank you, Sister Muhammad. My name is Captain Smokey Phillips. I worked in Harris County law enforcement for approximately 36 years. I attended the University of Houston, Harris County Sheriff's Office, numerous of hours with the FBI training school, Houston Police Academy. Currently, I serve as captain over surveillance in administration. You know, I was when you called me earlier, I was getting some thought on the actual homicide. You know, and I focus my thoughts on Black Americans. You know, in the United States, America represents 14% of the U.S. population, Black Americans. Yet, we are accounted for close to 52 to 54% of all homicide victims. That is alarming. In Houston alone, of course, I was talking with Mayor Turner and Chief Finner. The Houston murder rate is down, but I think now, since last week, and my prayers and thoughts goes out to the members and family and friends of Takeoff, the rapper from Migos, Takeoff.
Absolutely.
Murder in downtown Houston. You know, it was tough for to wake up in the morning and see that on television, that such a young person, life is taken away. I think he was around 28 years old.
Yes, he was.
As a result of gun violence. We just have to, you know, if we push back, if we look at violent crime, particularly during the COVID-19 time, in a couple of pandemics we endured, particularly violent crime increased. Right now, presently, we have an increase in domestic violence.
Yes,
in the home,
sir.
Those type of crimes are, you know, on the increase. But just in Harris County alone, I can, in 2021, in Harris County alone, we had, and I'm not speaking of Harris County, it includes Houston, those suburban areas like Baytown, Jersey Village, all those small areas, small cities within Harris County, a total of 720 murders, which is not bad for the third largest county in the United States. So we just have to, you know, find out what's in, what are some of the solutions or some of the new promising solutions that can address some of the factors behind our recent, during COVID time, crime trends, and now recent killings behind our recent trends now that we're taking as far as black-on-black crime in our community.
And, Smokey, you know, like, when you, I know you're probably not involved in arrests and things like that, but when these, you know, perpetrators are interviewed and, you know, asked about what happened and why it happened. You know, what are the young people saying upon being arrested for the gun violence that has taken place? And then, you know, I'm not going to even get into what is going on in terms of them getting released out on bond, and some of them have several bonds for violent offenses. But what are they saying when they are segregated and they, you know, have to give a reason to why all of this went on? What's on their mind?
A lot of it is just social issues that they have in the community, disputes about music, disputes about censures. You know, and when you talk to some of these young folks, some of them just don't value the sense of life sometimes. You know, and it mostly comes like, hey, he disrespected me. You know, and I've spoke with teens and young folks at scenes where there were homicides, just talking to them, and it seems to be they're not really concerned about going to jail. You know, and I tell you, as a policymaker, the reality of black homicides is real down here. It's real in America. You know, the devastating effects of homicide, particularly on black teens and young adults, to me, is a national pandemic. Because we have to figure out a way to let these young folks understand that guns ain't the way, and everything. You know, just have to, they want to sell it with guns. And it's a shame that nearly 9% of the black homicide victims were shot and killed with guns. This is an unappealing and unacceptable to me. We have to figure out a way to end the gun violence epidemic, I think it is, to reduce the homicides in African-American community. But, amen. The serious interacting crisis that occurred, violent crime and some property crimes rose across the country in 2020 in communities of all types. We just have to, I know the FBI published something out, national data describing some things. However, we have to talk to these people, talk to these youngsters about putting these guns down and having a discussion instead of killing and then having a criminal case.
I think people are afraid, though, Smokey. I just think that people are just reluctant to reach out to the teens because maybe they feel that they're armed, or maybe they feel like the teens will take it as a confrontation and, respond in violence. And at some point, we have to start talking to parents, because I'm just curious, and I want to save it for later, but my next question to you will be the access to guns. But I want to give other people an opportunity to ask you a question. So we have several people on the line. So if anybody want to ask Brother Smokey, Captain Smokey Phillips, a question, please press 1. But your mics are open, but I want everybody to get a chance to ask him a question if you have one.
Well, I'm going to dive off into it before they start asking questions. You know, in Texas, we have what they call a permitless gun carry. You can carry a gun in Texas. You don't need a license. You could be 18-year-old and purchase an AR-15, but it'd be 21-year-old to 21 to purchase the handgun. But you have to be 21 years old, and our governor thought it was great to carry, to allow Texans to permanently carry handguns. And the more handguns that people buy and they leave in their cars, or they leave in their homes, and their homes are burglarized, their cars are burglarized, and those guns are taken and placed on the street out here and put on the street. But You know, then
but smoking, they 15 and 16 years old. You know, they're not buying guns.
Yeah, and I'm gonna tell you this: in the area of town I work, they had a burglary that happened at an academy store. Some of the suspects were as young as 14 years old. They stole a tremendous amount of guns out of the academy store, and those guns were on the street. It was one incident where a pawn shop was robbed in daylight, and these four suspects went inside the store and stole approximately 82 guns. And where these guns wound up, they wound up in the African-American community. They wound up in people's hands that don't need to have those guns in their hands.
Yes, sir. Okay, well, I want to introduce our co-host and the founder of Descendants of American Slaves for Economic and Social Justice, and I'm pretty sure he has some questions for you, Brother Gene Gordon. Are you on?
Yes, ma'am. Assalamu alaikum. Peace, family.
Wa alaikum salam. All right, Brother Gene, you got some questions for Captain Phillips?
No, I don't have any questions for him. No, I just wanted to share with the listening audience some pretty much statistics in America and black people in particular. But no, to answer your question, no, I didn't have any questions for him.
Okay, well, go ahead and share with us what you have.
Well, I just wanted to, share with the listening audience, and I want to use this analogy. In a 9-year period of war, America lost 55,000 soldiers that was killed. In a 9-year period of war, 55,000 was killed in Vietnam. Here in the city streets of America, we have 321 people are shot every single day. 22 children, 22 of those are children under the age of 17. We got more guns than the population. So, what does that say? That says that it's safer for you to fight an actual war in the jungles of Vietnam than it is to live on the urban and city streets of America. That is criminal. That is criminal. I mean, 55,000 divided by 9, that comes up to what, about 4,800 a year, but yet in the urban cities of America, 321 are shot every day, and over 80% of the truth. Yeah, times 365. That's criminal, and yet we, as descendants of American slaves, we talk about crime. If you got the elections coming up on Tuesday, Democrats are talking about abortions. Republicans are talking about crime. Now, I'm not a Republican nor am I a Democrat, but Democrats are talking about social programs. Republicans, they're social, but they're more conservative. But my point being is that Democrats are talking about abortion issues and what else did I say? Abortion issue and something else. But while the Republicans are worried about economics and crime. Now, why do we have so much gun violence in the urban cities of America in the city streets? Number one, these are my thoughts. Number one, they want power. when they have a gun in their hand, they feel invincible. It's a sense of power. And the young are angry. They're angry. They have every right to be angry. But don't go and shoot down someone that looks like you. You're angry with the system, and that's pretty much what it is. Poverty is the parent and the root cause of crime. I mean, gunplay, all the gunplay that we have, robbing, you know, selling drugs, you get into the drug gang, you know, you carry a gun, you know, all of that is based around money, economics, you know, lack of power, inequality that is plaguing our communities, brothers and sisters now being killed. You know, everybody is in survival mode, you know. So what we have to do is stop and go to the root cause of it, and let's start addressing the root cause of it. And black people in particular, we have to stop turning our backs on things that we see and things that we see and hear in our communities. You know, the elders afraid to come outside. So we really have to begin to address these issues. I was watching CNN last night, which is more of a Democratic, you know, newsroom. Fox is Republican, CNN is Democratic. But the topic of the show was perilous politicians. Perilous politics is what they were talking about. And, of course, it's election season coming up on Tuesday, and they was talking about the Trump supporters and what happened. Now, here's my issue. We all know about the insurrection that happened on Capitol Hill. We saw Caucasian people stand up, and I was listening to some of them going and talk to their city councils, going to meetings, and they were angry, they were upset, and some of the things that they said, I said, here's a people that are willing to stand up on a lie and not be afraid to confront those who are in authority, those who make laws. Now, I'm not in favor of the insurrection that happened in Washington, not at all. But my point is that here is a people that stood up on a lie and went and bought the state's capital. But yet here we as black people, the most disenfranchised, the most impoverished, who forefathers built this economic powerhouse, who forefathers' blood, sweat, and tears soaks the soil of America. And we are afraid to stand up on truth on what is being done to them. What does that say? Here's a people who stood up on a lie. And today they still say that the election was stolen. And we know better than that. Stormed the state's capital. I mean, broke in. People were killed. But yet we as a people will not even stand up on truth and ask what is rightfully just due to us. That's terrible. That is horrible.
Yeah.
And I just think that we're at that point of 100% dissatisfaction. And it's trickling down to the babies because they see their parents struggling. And it's just so many factors. But I want to give somebody else a chance to speak because I thought I heard someone else come in.
You know, Sister Queen, just Bob Brantley is here.
Okay, good evening, Dr. Brantley. How are you?
I'm good, Sister. Good to be with you.
All right, did you have some questions for Captain Phillips or you just had a comment?
Yeah. I do have a question. And I'm sorry that I'm struggling with some symptoms of COVID, so I can't speak very well.
Oh, wow.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, my wife and I both had COVID. Of course, everything that Brother Gordon said is absolutely true and on point. And the first thing, when you asked Brother Phillips, you know, what's causing all this, I think his response was something like, young people feel disrespected by each other. And they are disrespected by each other. They're disrespected by adults. They're disrespected by the system. This whole American environment in many ways are designed to disrespect young black people. And proliferation of guns in our community is not an accident. As you said, 15-year-olds don't buy guns, but somehow guns managed to be released into our streets, just like drugs got released into the streets. And so, you know, it is, we have an environment, a complex ecosystem of disrespect in the black community that wasn't created by the black community, but it has infected the black community right down to our babies. And so that's a fact. But here's, to me, a discussion that we need to have, Brother Phillips. You know, gun control is considered a bad word in some corners, but I don't see how we can avoid the elephant in the room. There are guns. Now, I grew up at a time in the streets of St. Louis where we didn't have guns. We had to fight hand in hand, and every now and then somebody came up with a knife. But there were ways to whoop his ass, too. We didn't have guns. But now guns are as available as McDonald's hamburgers in the black community. And so they're here. They're with us. They're in, they affect our community. But how do we get them out? Without the guns, we won't have gun violence. And I'll settle for kids having to wrestle, box, or play football and do other kinds of things to exercise their competitive juices. But we need to get rid of the guns. Now, we know who manufactures guns. We know who sells the guns. We know who distributes the guns. We know who fight against and lobby against any attempts of Congress or anybody else to restrict the ownership of guns. You know, in this country, everybody drives a car. The car is registered. It has a VIN number. You have to go through a bunch of hoops in order to qualify for driving one. And when you buy it, you have to have it registered, and you have to have insurance. I mean, there are all kinds of requirements we put on car ownership, but we don't want to put any on gun ownership. And these folk, primarily right-wing men, insist that the Constitution says that everybody in America can own all the guns that they can get their hands on. Actually, the Constitution does not say that, and Brother Phillips knows that. The Constitution does not say that everybody can just own a gun. And so I think the discussion, that we need to be having is how do we vote against people who want to run for office but who will not support gun control? Not only the removal of assault weapons from the street, but closing the loopholes on being able to buy guns privately and sell them privately, closing the loophole of not having to be registered. Every gun should have a registration number, and every person who owns one should have to have it registered to them. You know, we need some acute, strict, absolute gun control legislation and processes in this country to begin to eliminate the continued proliferation of guns. And those that exist in the community need to be registered.
But a vice grip should be better.
Hey,
well,
Brother Phillip, whatever would work.
Despite the politicalized claims that Democratic cities, they claim that the rise is a result of the criminal justice reform in liberal-leaning jurisdictions such as Harris County, they think with the bond reform, and, you know, I look at it historically that it's all years ago when the police would arrest black men, charge them with felonies, and now the laws say if you own a felony, you can't get a gun. So you didn't arrest a lot of black men that are not eligible to buy a gun now because of some arrest that happened in the 60s or 70s or 80s where the police were not fair with the laws when it came to arresting African-American men. And
right.
I tell you this, even though they look at Democrats as liberal-leaning, murders rose equally in cities ran by Republicans.
Yes.
So the so-called red states actually saw some of the highest murder rates of all. But they're not putting that out there. They're not going to put that out there. You know? So to me, it's like years ago when I started in the 80s in law enforcement, I started under Republican leadership in Harris County. And they would throw the book at you. We had a district attorney that would throw the book at you. But who was being arrested?
Mm-hmm.
Brown and black men.
Yeah.
You know, and so sometimes we are the monsters of what was created years ago that happens now when they have this catch and release thing they got going on where bonds are no longer considered punishment. Without going to trial, you had guys that got arrested. Back in the 80s, you had an African-American man that could be arrested for criminal trespass, which is a Class B misdemeanor, and stay in jail for 2 years before his trial even come up. 2 years.
Yeah.
Now, on some bonding issues, I kind of understand, but on some, when you got defendants charged with multiple murders, multiple robberies, then those persons should be kept incarcerated until trial.
Absolutely.
And there are cases when the guy accused of murder gets out of jail and go kill the witnesses.
Yeah.
I mean, it's different, but we got to look at the causation of all this stuff. I mean, dating back from maybe it's Jim Crow times up to now that law enforcement was very heavy-handed on the many African-Americans in their community, and men that didn't do crimes was maybe treated unfairly or maybe was unjustly put in jail, and they had no choice but to plea out to a felony because just to get out of jail to take care of their families. And now when it comes this time where these guys are in their 50s and early 60s, they can't buy guns now in Texas because as a felon, you can't buy a gun.
Well, I think the one thing that you mentioned, Smokey, was, we talked about back in Jim Crow days, and part of the problem is definitely economics. That's part of the problem because when you see the news and watch the news in various cities, the big metropolitan cities, these people are not just shooting randomly. Like Smokey said, the young people is more about disrespect, but then you have some little older people or even the young people. This is about taking. You know, they're following people home. They're shooting them. They're taking their money because they saw them go to the bank. Or just like I think it was a police officer from Louisiana that was killed in Houston, the young man said, well, he had a nice watch on, and he looked like he had money, so I robbed him. And a lot of this has been robbery. A lot of this is about taking money. Whether you're 16 or 26 or 36, it's a lot of robberies going on, snatch and grab and all of these things. And it all comes back to the economics in the community, the lack of ownership. These children don't have anything to look forward to. There's no such thing, barely, as generational wealth. These fathers and mothers do not have businesses or even capital to pass on to their children. So now when you're 16, 17 years old, you may not be college material, or you may not feel that you can afford college or whatever the case may be. And so you got to figure out, how am I going to make it? And then you got social media and media itself. And they advertising the newest car. And they advertising the newest tennis shoe. And they got Stephon Curry. And they got LeBron James. And they got Michael Jordan. And they got all of these temptations. And it's like, Mom, give me $343 for some Jordans. And the mama say, hey, I can barely pay the light bill. What the hell are you talking about? And so being in that peer pressure, when some of your friends are walking around with the new Jordans, or they got the Michael Kors jacket or whatever it is, and they was like, I'm not going to be teased about these $50 shoes anymore. I'm not going to be teased about these $30 shoes anymore. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go get a gun. I know where to go get it. And I'm just going to take it. And this is the mentality. I'm going to take it. Don't create a solution to the economic issues in the communities where these children have something to look forward to have the responsibility of ownership. They're going to keep taking because they're hungry and because there's a carrot being dangled in their faces, and they want this and they want that, and they don't know nothing about working for nothing, saving money, being able to go get it. And then parents. Now, Smokey, you know this as well as I do. Tell me about how many people that young people have shot, and it's 2 o'clock in the morning, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, it's 5 o'clock in the morning. What the hell? I wish one of my children would have. Why you don't know where your children are at 3 o'clock in the morning? And I know about sneaking out. I know about that, but come on now. Everybody's child is not sneaking out. Some people are just walking out, and parents are throwing up their hands. Go ahead.
I think that some parents do the best they can to try to, you know, rear their kids, but in some cases, some kids are to take care of the family. And, you know, I mean, it is amazing to me that when I was patrolling years ago, I went to a house where a young juvenile kid ran the house. The mother, the parents, the father, the mother was actually scared of the kid. And you look at some of the, you know, the psychological impairments that they had, you know, bullying in schools. There's a lot of things that contribute to just self-hatred, man. And, you know, like I said, some of the kids, even you talk about social media. I mean, I've seen people, young black men, publish, go live on Instagram with a murder.
Absolutely.
Just in the South Lawn Apartments, about 2 years ago, they actually videotaped the murder of a young man being killed in the doorway. And they put it on, and then the most, I don't understand why you murder someone, then you put it on Instagram. You know? And, you know, even if you commit crimes, they're putting ATM, they rob an ATM machine. And some of these young men, they broadcast with rolls of money everywhere. So I don't understand why they do it. I have a teenage son myself. I kind of monitor what he does. But, you know, it's just, I guess it's just a trend, this social media thing. Even in the death of Takeoff in Houston, the murder was videotaped.
Yeah, I saw the video.
Him laying on the ground, bleeding out.
Dying.
In his head. It was
dying.
Videotaped.
Yes.
Put on Instagram.
Yeah,
so,
I saw the video.
You raised an interesting point. I wanted to connect that back to something Brother James did and Brother Vernon's office.
Okay, I'm sorry, Brother Vernon. We can barely hear you.
Oh, you can barely hear me?
Yeah, you on speaker or something?
Is this any better?
Yes.
Okay. Y'all are raising so many interesting points. But I wanted to connect it back to something that Brother Gene said. He talked about this being a result of or a symptom of these children, these people who are, committing so many violent acts in our community as a grab for power, a need for power. And when you talk about, people who would straight up do something wrong, commit murder or rob an ATM and then broadcast that. They're looking for recognition. They're looking for the ability to say, hey, I did something and no one can stop me. So that raised a question in my mind, listening to all the descriptions of what you were talking about. It seems like in that instance, that's where the rubber meets the road. You're dealing with people who have been so disenfranchised and continue to be so disenfranchised that they're looking for any way that they can to stick it back to the man or, do something that somebody can't stop them from, even if that's the worst thing you can think of to do. So I wanted to raise a question to Captain Phillips, in your years, on the beat, actually interacting in the community like that, did you have any thoughts or ideas about how you interact with someone with the mindset of, someone who's hell-bent on power, that's their driving force, okay? They don't have the economics. They don't have nothing. They want something. They want the sneakers. They want something in life, but they just don't have it. Do you have any ideas about how you interact with someone in that instance? Kind of so it doesn't de-escalate, but if we know that's what we're dealing with, it would make sense that we try to approach the situation and approach individuals like that so that we can get them away from that position of, hey, you're about to do anything you can.
Well, I can say this much. The black communities and the brown communities in particular is in dire need of some kind of homicide prevention centers in the neighborhood that with programs of prevention, research, and treatment for them. But when you talk to some of these young guys, they get the attitude, I don't care. Take me to jail. Years ago, I was afraid to go to jail, afraid of what my mother would do, my father would whoop you. I was afraid of punishment from my family, from my mother or my father. But today, these kids don't care about, some don't care about going to jail. Jail is a prize. Oh, I killed so-and-so, and they brag upon who they killed. And when you talk to some of them, I understand they're not in the best socioeconomic environment, the ills of that. And if I can say, if I can talk to one kid out of 20 and save that one kid, I feel really good about it, because every day in these neighborhoods, in some neighborhoods, the result is violence, whether it's fighting, whether it's stabbing, and not talking about the unreported amount of shootings that happen that people shot. And it's not really a number on that you can really say, because you don't know if it's self-inflicted or someone shot them, they're not talking about it. The friend down the street shoot, they don't want to talk about it. What they want to do is get justice on the person down the street, and that results in a homicide. So when you talk to some of these young guys, we call them young guns, they put the guns down and talk. They put the guns down let's have a conversation. Well, we had a conversation, and now I still feel disrespected. And that results in something happened later on down the week or something. But talking to them, some of these guys, even after shooting, they brag about shooting, yeah, I did it. They make these statements, and, you know, it's just hard to see them every day if every day your life is filled with violence around you. Every day.
Let me, listening to that, and I want to piggyback on what Dr. Brantley mentioned, how do we end the gun violence in the black community. But to go straight to the point is that not only is it an economic problem, it's a lack of knowledge. Lack of knowledge and self-hatred toward one another, because everybody looks down on the black man. The whole world looks down on the black man. And America was built on white supremacy. So the question is asked, has we grown into his mind? I would say what we see happening within the black community is white supremacy. We have grown into him to hate our own, the people that look like us. We have grown into his mind. They hate us, those who are racist, they hate us. We have grown into his mind to think like him. So, but not knowing that, you know, you shoot your brother, you kill your brother or sister because you don't know who your brother or sister is by nature. Now, when you say community, we have to have some preventions. And when you talk to these young brothers out here, you know, they don't care about going to jail. That sounds like a sense of hopelessness. They've given up hope. The system has failed. The community has failed them. The leaders have failed them. Politicians have failed them. The church has failed. The mosque has failed. So they've given up hope. So what we have to do is somehow, some way, is to restore hope back into the black man and the black woman. They have no knowledge about who they are, where they come from. If you ask the brother out here, hey, do you know who Denmark Vesey is? Do you know who Harriet Tubman is, what she did? You know who Marcus Garvey was? They don't know. So my generation, we have failed the younger generation. We didn't teach them the struggles of black people. They know nothing about their history. They know nothing about where they come from. So, yes, we need homicide preventions and crime prevention centers set up, but we also need to incorporate and teach, you know, them on who they are and where they come from. I think that's more valuable, and they just don't know. I mean, I was working on the job site on the city west side. Young brothers couldn't have been no more than 15, 16 years old, walking down the alley with a automatic weapon, a clip in it, you know, about 9 inches long, and they were just going to the store to get a soda or something, you know. But what Dr. Brantley was saying is, how do we stop it? Well, we have to reduce not only the cost of government, but the use of government. When you reduce it, you have to look at the numbers. You have to look at all stems back to the dollars. Gun manufacturing or lobbying Congress to pass gun laws. I think the biggest gun law was passed was during the Obama administration, where everybody had a right to carry a gun. Now it has become the Wild Wild West. So, but you have to ask yourself, why did they make that law? How did they make that law when the people had no, you know, vote, didn't vote on it? It's the gun manufacturers who are up there lobbying Congress and the Senate, and they're paying them, they're lobbying. But I want you to know something. 65 to 70% of the tax revenue that goes into government, 70% of that goes to welfare subsidies. So if you could begin to, we always gonna have welfare, but if you can cut down and turn people into owners of producing capital, and you can do it. You know, turn people into owners of producing capital where they can own some of the wealth of America. And once these young brothers and sisters who are out here doing, you know, with this gunplay, and now that you have to restore hope, I mean, but in the urban city of America, look at the landscape that they have, you know, put before our eyes, you know. So the brothers, young brothers and sisters are giving up. But I want to also say this. 2021, 45,000 died of gun violence. 45,000. 20,000 was homicide and 24,000 was suicide. Mm. Mm. 24,000 of that was suicide. So we have got to, you know, programs are good, but we can't. This is a systemic problem that we have in our community. It's systemic. It's systemic. We have to do things to start changing policies and systems. But with the gun laws that were passed, you know, the people didn't want that, you know. But we're just disconnected with what's going on and the policy making in Washington, and we have to start, you know, just coming down on leaders. You know, it's time for us to really do something unimaginable and do something that, you know, is uncommon. We can't continue to take, you know, the same approaches to solve these problems.
Okay, we have a question online. Go ahead, brother.
I was going to kind of echo what Brother Gene was just saying, because the idea just hit me that either way, we got about 15 or 20 years to implement a solution. Otherwise, you know, we got yet another generation that we're going to just watch the problems get worse. We either got 15 years to really grab a hold of the next generation, the youth now, deposit those seeds in them so that when they grow up and they're 20, 25 years old, then they're kind of off on the right track and they're moving in the right direction. Or we have another 15, 20 years, and I'm leaning toward 15 or less, to become the influencers, to become successful people, because we see people without power are looking to people with power to follow. You can either have that power they want and be influential in their lives. You can be the model that they would want to follow by empowering yourself, we empowering ourselves, or we can just pour everything that we got into the babies that we can grab so that when they become of age, they'll take over where we left off. That was my only comment.
Yes, sir, Brother Finer, and you are absolutely right. We don't have 15 years, really. We probably got 10 because they start killing at 12. All right, area code 502, your mic is live.
Hey, how y'all doing? This is Brother Mishron from Louisville, Kentucky. How y'all doing?
Hi, Brother Mishron. How are you?
I'm blessed. I've been listening to the conversation. So I guess to your guests, I just need to ask a question, then I want to give an analogy, because as a military person, I've taught that you apply certain things and you see the measurable results, all right? For myself, I actually has applied some things in my 30-plus years in living in Louisville, Kentucky, when I moved here. And now I'm seeing the results of that. So, but I need to ask your guests, have you ever heard of social-emotional learning? And it also says adult social-emotional learning. Have you ever heard that terminology? Have you ever looked it up?
Are you asking
looking
Captain Phillips that?
I'm asking, has he ever heard of it, or has he ever had anyone talk to you about it? Have you ever had that conversation? It's called social emotional learning, and then you could put adult social emotional learning. There's five things that generates that, but I need to ask you first before I make, have you ever heard of it? Have you ever had any conversation with anyone about that?
I've had conversations. Is it dealing with the increased engagement and talk about different social activities or something like that?
Yeah. Well, the reason why I bring it up is that it says it has right here, it has five things that must be addressed when you're dealing with the social issues. And culturally, we were left out of being able to control our social issues. You know, I'm 62 years old, grew up in Miami, went in the military in 1978. Fortunately, I was sheltered and shielded and I like to say removed from the black experience. I didn't have the black experience. All mine came in the military. But when I returned back to the military, I mean back to the civilian, I moved because my wife was from the West End, the democratic environment that she wanted to live in. I lived 24 years in an environment that I saw the social, emotional issues. And what I mean by that is that culturally, we're suffering from our own inability to have an incubator with ourselves. We need to have an incubator with ourselves, okay? And before we can get anybody else to do right by us. And I just want to throw that out there. You know, Queen knows me. I can go a whole lot of places with this. I just wanted to drop that in there, adult social emotional learning. If you've not looked it up, if you've not read it, there's five things that we should look at. And I just want to sit back and see what y'all think about that. And thank you for having me on.
What are the five things?
Well, you know, I'm always – okay, I appreciate you asking. I'm a person that believes that I like people to look it up because sometimes it's better for someone to learn it when they see it themselves. But I'll tell you what they are. It says right here, the five are. It says observation. It says attention. It says retention. And it says reproduction and motivation. So let me read that again. We got to be willing to have real observation of ourselves. We got to learn how to pay attention to our behavior. It says retention. We need to do and make moves that are measurable results, that we say are measurable results, that are retention. Then it says here, reproduction. We have to show the dominant European culture that we can create production for ourselves before we even talk about asking them to do something for us. And then the last thing, once we accomplish that, we become motivation to ourselves. We don't need no one outside to motivate us if we're willing to motivate ourselves. But if we don't take the time to have an incubator period time with ourselves to go over the things that we have been struggling with, then all we are is just whistling the wind. And the dominant European culture, my sister have heard me say that. We can play the game of chess. They are not obligated to tell us how to beat them. We are obligated to beat them at the game of chess. But we constantly whining and crying, pissed off, mad at what they're doing to us. But the game is chess, and we got to learn how to play the game of chess. We got to know the moves. We got to know our queens. We got to know that we're kings. We got to know the pawns. We got to know the knights. We got to know all the moves so we can beat them. But I digress. I just wanted to add that and put that in the conversation.
Okay.
Thank you, Michonne.
Mr. Michonne, but I got a question for you. You think the fundamentals of learning, what you talked about, can overcome years of self-hatred and blind rage?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. You know, and I'm going to give an example of why. I told you. I lived 24 years in the community that I'm not from that community. I lived in that community. Here's what they noticed. It says those young people saw me living on 40th Street. I was known as Mr. Michonne or Uncle Michonne. All because how I behave and the way that I conducted myself, these little boys, dope dealers, guns, they knew. I knew they had guns. They knew. They knew. I knew they knew. They knew I knew. They were cleaning snow off of my porch. They was making things. Little boys would come up the street and start pulling up their pants because they knew Uncle Michonne or Mr. Michonne wasn't putting up their crap. But you know why? Because when those little boys were little shorties, real young, I was telling them constantly, pull your pants up. Don't you dare walk by my house. Do that crap in front of me. This and that. Well, when they started growing up, I started witnessing these little boys telling their friends who didn't even know me, pull your pants up. Uncle Michonne ain't going to put up with that crap. And everything, pull your pants up. So, yes, we don't have 10, 15 years, 20 years. We have a short period of time. But we got to be willing to have an incubator. We got to have an incubator with ourselves, okay, and fix us. So they can see, these young people can see something different with us. And I've always learned that when a dominant European culture man see you handling your business, it seems like they always seem to act appropriate and give you the respect you deserve when they recognize you ain't putting up with their bullshit. Excuse me. I'm sorry.
Except in certain examples like Tulsa, where black folks came together and proved what they could do and were willing to do, there was no reciprocal respect there. It got burned down because of white racism. And so, you know, we're living Yes, sir?
My response to that is just because, you know, I'm a military guy. Just because Black Wall Street was burned down, just because it was burned down and the laws and the laws and the things didn't work for us back then, that didn't mean that we needed to go run and hide and cower down and be angry and pissed off. And it meant that we needed to rebuild, restart, and do it again. The times are different now. We're not living in the 1600, 1800. The law is more on our side now, but if we don't know how to take a handle of it, if we don't know how to organize ourselves, if we don't know how to, you know, make our young people respect us, make them respect us, then we can't ask them to respect themselves. That's our responsibility.
Okay.
That's not the European, it ain't the police department, it ain't nobody else's responsibility, but our men's responsibility to put a perimeter around our community. Take our community back. We be willing to do just like the Black Panthers. We can now take guns and we can patrol our own community. Back then, they wouldn't allow us to do it because they passed laws because they didn't want us to have guns to fight against them. Guess what? We can recreate that very same thing right now. Take guns, patrol our own community. Control our own community. It ain't got to be called the Black Panthers. It can be control anything. But we got to do that. When they see that we're taking that control, guess what? The police going to respond differently now in the 21st century than it was back then. Back then, they shut us down because they didn't want us to fight against them. But that's not the time we're in. So we got to learn how to unlearn and relearn. We gotta learn
it won't happen in today's society if you had black men.
See, I don't believe that's like saying slavery. We're never gonna come out of slavery. I mean, we're gonna be slaves the rest of our lives because we can't say. I don't believe that.
Okay, wait a minute. Everybody can't talk at the same time, so let's be respectful of one another so we can hear. What were you saying, Captain Phillips?
I'm saying that if we did, during the time the Black Panthers were patrolling the neighborhoods, that won't work for – I know it won't work in Houston. I don't know about Chicago. I don't know about Washington, D.C. All I know is that I don't think the men are able – want to take that chance of patrolling out here in these neighborhoods with guns to stop young black kids from committing violence.
And that's called being a coward. So when you're not willing to, when you're not willing to face your own children, why in the hell are you going to ask somebody else to do it for you? If you're not willing to stand up, the first, my son and my daughter, guess who whipped their ass before to get them to go to school? I did. My son is now practicing attorney. My daughter is both an educator. Guess who made sure when I told them to go to school, and I said, if I show up in that school and you doing anything other than doing what you need to do in that school, I will have your ass. Guess where that started from? It started from my house, okay?
But listen. Miss Sean, listen.
Hey, I'm sorry. I digress. You can put me on mute. You can put me on mute, and I'll be quiet.
I don't want you to be quiet. I want you to listen and just calm down a little bit. But listen, we have policies that we are fighting against. It's not just, I'm going to pick up a gun and patrol my neighborhood. First of all, you pick up a gun and call yourself patrolling the neighborhood, and you think that you're informing the neighborhood, you're going to get shot. That's just straight up.
If you're in the country.
Wait a minute. I'm in the country. I'm in Bryan-College Station, right? In Bryan-College Station, we have a population with, when the students are away from Texas A&M, we got 50,000 people. But we got 7 forms of law enforcement here. You walk outside with a gun in the terms of, I'm patrolling my neighborhood, you just going to, one of two things is going to happen. Either you're going to get shot or either you're going to get arrested, because that's called brandishing a weapon. So, but listen, this is what I wanted to say. I don't disagree with me, Sean, because that is something that we have to do. And even though the Democrats are talking about programs, we have to create that village, because that is what me, Sean, is talking about. When we
talk about our
village, we have to create a village for our children, because who else is going to look after, talk
Amen.
To, mentor
Amen.
Our children
right.
but us? But then
right.
also we have to create an avenue for their parents, for their
right.
parents to be able to watch them and feed them at the same time, which is damn near impossible. You can't feed your child and watch your child at the same time. Parents have to go to work. And here's the thing. It's also, you're dealing with children whose mothers are 15, 16 years older. You're dealing with parents who feel like, yes, I'm a parent, but I'm still young, and I need to get out there and do this and do that. I've seen so many daughters that look like their mother's sister, because you can't tell the difference between the mama and the sister. And not only that, they dress the same way. Booty shorts, titties out, everything. You can't tell the difference. There's a moral factor that is missing. The moral authority of our people is missing. There is
Amen.
No moral code anymore. There's no respect. There's no church.
Right.
There's no mosque. There's nobody with a God entity reaching out to these children. These children don't go to church. You look, you get up and you look in your neighborhood in big metropolitan cities. You don't see droves of people getting ready to go to church. You see the older people. But the 16, 17, 18, 19-year-old children, they don't know nothing about baptism. They don't know nothing about Sunday school. They don't know nothing about church. And I'm not saying any particular religion. What I'm saying is that we have lost our moral authority. Back in the day, it was just certain things you didn't do. And Smokey,
right.
you can bear me witness. There was a young man, I think he was 15, 16 years old. His girlfriend called him cheating, and he got mad and shot her 22 times.
Yep. Yep.
Am I lying, Smokey?
And he dumped her in by a lake. He shot her. They go to Missouri City that happened.
But the thing about it, he got out on bond. He got out on a $50,000 bond. He shot her 22 times.
Say what I need to say so I can get out?
Okay.
I got to go to another meeting, so I just want to say this. Extreme times require extreme means. And I took some extreme measures to get a hand over my house, to have a successful marriage that I have, to be in the financial position that I am, to have both of my children doing very well, adopted children. I took somebody else's seed because I can't have any children, and produced and made them successful. So all I'm saying is extreme means going to require some extreme means of trying to handle it. And I'm there, but I can't do it by myself. Amen. Y'all have a blessed one. I look forward to talking to y'all again. Take care.
Thank you, Michelle. Bye-bye.
And to piggyback on what he's saying, I'm not against that, the older adults try to police their communities. But right now, during this time, it's too dangerous. I mean, I don't say, hey, go get guns and go to your community and try to police your community, because laws are different in each state. And I'm going to tell you this. I teach a gun class, and I tell you this. If you go in Spring, Texas, which is suburban in Harris County, and you go in Sunnyside, you see more open carry in Spring, Texas, than you do Sunnyside. You know why? The law enforcement is different. It's more alert. If you see a black man with a gun, you'd be surprised on how many officers say, hey, show me a route over there, versus a white male that's carrying an AR-15 down the road in Spring, Texas. So it ain't. We're not back in doing the time of the Black Panthers where they could do that, because the laws have changed. But what we advocate as police officers, if you see something, say something. If you see it, you'd be surprised of all the people at home that see crimes and don't report it. You can go in anonymously if you want to. If you see something, say something. The smallest something that you say could solve that crime. And I don't urge citizens to go out there and be, intervene. If you got a gun, guy going down the street with a gun and shooting another guy, you go intervene in that. No, you put yourself at risk. And not only do you put yourself at risk, you put your family at risk.
Right.
So I don't advocate that what happened in the 40s or the 50s and the 60s, that we can do that in today's society.
By nature, we are righteous and moral people. And if we can create an environment and an atmosphere to where they want to put the guns down, they want to do away with criminal activity, because now they have something to look forward to, and restorative of hope and justice, So that's what we have to do. I think we need to start taking a more innovative approach to solving this problem that we have. We cannot continue to do the same thing over and over and over, expecting a different result. We have to try other means, but first we have to restore hope. And the only way that you restore hope is to, create something and come up with a plan to people can be empowered. We cannot go around the main cause and the parent of crime. It's poverty. People jack cars with guns because they don't have money to buy their own. You know, we have to address the economic issue. I think if we tackle that and give people an opportunity to be equal in a society, you know, it's a social issue. And then let's start demanding for social justice within social institutions that make up the social order. We have literally laid down on Marcus Garvey. We've laid down on Sojourner Truth. We've laid down on Harriet Tubman. We laid down on everybody that ever stood for us. We laid down on them. We've laid down. You know, we have got to, you know, we have got to get something that people are willing to fight for. You know, I was listening to the early voter turnout last week, you know, out in the suburbs, West County, 25,000 showed up at the polls, early voter. In the city of St. Louis, 400. 400. You know, why aren't people voting? It's because they have given up on the system. The system has failed, and they feel that it's really, you know, it makes no sense to go out and vote. Because they use our vote to get in, but once they in there, they're not for the people, of the people, by the people. They're of corporations, for corporations, and bought by gun manufacturers because they have the power. They have own all the assets in America. They own them. They have all the power. We have got to not go around the economic, you know, stigma or the economic. That is the root cause of crime. Until we address the cause and not the effect. See, we continue on addressing the effects. We have to go to the root cause. We have to change policies and systems within social institutions.
Go ahead, Smokey.
And when you talk about voting, even I was listening to brothers saying that they're down. The African American turnout in Harris County is down 25% compared to last voting cycle. And most of those, in that 25% are the black and young voters. They're not showing up to the polls.
Yeah.
And so that, you know,
we had a 9% turnout rate during the primary. 9%. 9% of registered voters showed up at the polls. So that means 1.5% of eligible voters did not show up to vote because they've given up. I mean, really, the system has dealt a bad hand.
Okay, so
because
listen,
we're not holding the politicians accountable.
Preach. So we got about 41 minutes, and what I want to offer the audience is this, solutions. We got to talk about the real solutions. Now, I'm gonna say my part, and then I want everybody else to offer a real, tangible solution. And what I'm going to say is this. If parents do not take responsibility for the behavior of their children, and keep in mind that they are children, because it's one thing, like Smokey said, we got children who are running whole households because they out here making money and the parents are afraid of them and this, that, and the other. That's a messed up situation. The other part of it is that I know Smokey remembers that when they passed the law and said back in the 80s, I believe it was, that, oh, corporal punishment is out. They took it out of schools and had the audacity to take it out of households where your children could call the police on you if you spanked them. That was, let me tell you something, that was by design. that any government can tell you that you cannot discipline your child. And I'm going to tell you like Minister Farrakhan said. Minister Farrakhan taught us this, and I believe it wholeheartedly. You cannot use language with a child in the animalistic stage of life when they are not able to comprehend the words that you say. They know no, they know stop, but they also know how to get into stuff when you're not looking. And therefore, you continue to use language. And they realize language don't have any consequences. So therefore, the language is not something that intimidates or fears me. Now, you talk about, oh, you know, Queen talking about beating your children's ass. Yes, I am. Yes, I am. You have to, when they're little, not abuse, but punishment. Because the rod, you got to have a rod of discipline. This is why children are not afraid, because there are no consequences. You take their phones, you take their Xboxes, you take their PlayStations, and then they go over to their friend house and they playing. Or when you turn your back, they go get it out the closet and they playing. Or some of them got another phone. So you haven't done anything. And at the same time, what I see is mothers, fathers, cousins, nieces, nephews walking to the damn cemetery to bury a 15-year-old, a 12-year-old, a 14-year-old, a 20-year-old. That's what I see. And I also see the community from which they come. And I see the effects of gentrification. And I see the effects of on-purpose poverty. On purpose. Because there's no social justice. There's no economic justice. And you mean to tell me that you expect sanity out of parents who are insane? Because poverty will put you there, working two jobs, trying to raise your children. You working two jobs just to pay the rent. Look at the prices of rent in Houston now, Smokey. How many people can afford to pay $1,800, $1,200 for a two-bedroom apartment in the hood? Prices is going up, but paychecks are not. And if we don't get involved in policy making, because they make policies that are no good for our communities, and all we do is sit back and complain, hold nobody accountable. We can stand up in droves to go to a damn Black Panther movie, but what about Wakanda right here? What about the community you live in? Turn the damn TV off. Take the laptop. Take the phone. Because your children are being programmed through social media. All the stuff that they're exposed to. TikTok. So I'm saying this. There's no moral authority. First. Secondly, there's no economic justice because we won't stand up for shit. Third, there's no social justice. Look at what happened when George Floyd got killed. He was murdered, and the whole world thought it was an atrocity. And the whole world stood up for a Black man, for an African-American man, not a rich man, not a superstar. He wasn't a rapper. He was an everyday African-American male and got murdered in public. And the whole world stood up. And then when the cameras went away, and the crowds started to lessen, the fight for justice died. And they saw you. They saw you. They saw the power of unity. They saw how you could galvanize and come together, protest peacefully, and all of a sudden, here come the guns. Well, goddammit, that reminds me of something else. When the Black Panthers had Oakland in that same state where the entire African-American community was ready to stand up, went to Sacramento and stormed the Capitol, all of a sudden, dope came from nowhere. Here, cocaine, pills, anything you wanted. It just all of a sudden showed up and destroyed Oakland. Guns are destroying us. They've tried everything, COVID. COVID 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. They tried everything. What are you going to do? You don't have long to stand up and do something for yourself, because I promise you, nobody else is going to stand up and do it for us. That's my solution. We got to stand up. We got to get some moral authority. We got to get involved in policy that affects us. Who's next?
This is Brantley. Let me say real quick.
Go ahead.
Everything you said, but the last thing Gene said was, we're not holding politicians accountable. And we must do that. We must do that. In this land, in this society, you know, that we're supposed to be a country of laws and that kind of thing. Well, you know, if we're a democracy, then we have to function as one, and we have to function through our votes. We have to insist on our vote on all levels. We need to hold politicians accountable, and if they don't act right, then some of us need to run for political office, because that's where change happens. It can be stimulated at the community level, but it has to happen on the policy level, and policymakers are politicians. So, and we have to, with one hand, try to control things in our families, in our households, and manage and steward that situation of family, while on the other hand, we have to fight in society for what we know is right and what we know we need. So we don't have the luxury of doing one at a time. We have to feed our children. And then we have to fight for the right to have children or not, the right for women to work or not, and the right for all people to vote, period. If, without that, there won't be any real changes in society. We won't get laws passed that are necessary. And so this situation is complex. I think everybody tonight has offered wonderful solutions. And I love my brother, the military brother, who's willing, who has courage. He's willing to fight. That's cool. You know, our men must have courage. Our women already have it, but the men must have courage. If Black men don't have courage, then bad stuff happens in our families and in our communities. Much of the responsibility is on Black men. Black women have made a way out of no way, have held things together, and in some cases even provided leadership. And they're great leaders, by the way. But in the meantime, this society, this environment, this political, social, economic environment, first of all, was designed to kill us if we didn't do right. Police were invented to kill us when we didn't want to do right. And laws now are on the books to stop us when we really try to do what's best for our people. So it's a complex beast that we face. But by the grace of God, we will endure, we have endured, and I believe we will succeed until Jesus comes and ends this whole mess. But for now, we have to, as I've always said, globally, act locally. Every level of governance is important, and we need to continue to fight the political battle. People are not voting, you know, we're going to die. It's simple as that. If black folks don't vote, we're going to die. Usually when we do vote, we win. That's why there's so many voter suppression activities out there to keep us from voting. So if we want to fight somebody, let's grab a Negro in a collar and say, come, let's vote. No matter that they're in some places, white men standing out there with guns, okay? Don't be intimidated by that. And in Florida, black folk are getting arrested for voting when they have registration cards and told they were allowed to vote. But they're going to jail anyway. Don't let that scare you. You know, if you're scared, then you're going to remain a slave, an economic slave, a political slave, social slave. I don't think we're interested in remaining slaves. And we cannot allow the strategies of ignorant, racist, white people that we can't do it. We can't go there. We can't let them convince us that we can't do it. Because many of them are angry because they've not been able to succeed in life. Not really. Not on a level playing field. When things were tilted, they did pretty good. When things got a little level here and there, they didn't do so well. And now they're angry. And they have all the guns. I'm going to say this and I'll stop. But I got to go to another one. We still need to control guns in this country. Until guns are controlled, you know who has most of the guns? These rednecks out here that I live with in Carroll County in Maryland, okay? Some of my neighbors were the guys that were down there on January 6th. They just haven't been caught and arrested. But they're the ones with the guns, really. And gun control will put some controls on them so that then our police, our brother Phillips and other law enforcement people can really begin to aggressively get guns out of our community. If the guns stay in our community, then we're not going to stop gun violence. That's simple. Okay? That's simple. And money will not change that. We need to get the guns out while we get the fear and the ignorance and the self-hate out of our own selves and our own communities. I'm so glad, Queen, that you have this program and that your people are there. These are conversations we need to continue to have. Thank you so much.
Yes, sir, Dr. Brandon, and thank you so much for taking time out today, even though you're not feeling well. So I'm praying for you and your wife to get better soon.
Thank you.
My prayers also go to you, Doc, and I hope you and your wife. You know, COVID is real serious, especially African American community. And I remember as part of a union, we were discussing detention officers that worked in COVID tanks. We were talking about, hey, maybe these older detention officers that suffer with diabetes, overweight, that should not work in COVID tanks. And to my amazement, the white administrators in the jail, they were agreeing with me. But don't you know it was one black man that said no? He said, everybody is equal in the jail. I said, well, I don't agree with that because we have suffered a lot of things in our lives. And diabetes is one killer of African-American men and women versus whites. And, you know, sometimes it's inherited. Sometimes high blood pressure is inherited. But this one black commander stood against me. But, I mean, it got passed, but the white commanders didn't understand why would he say that, what he said. But, and I certainly agree with everything you said and how to curtail the violence in our communities, how to get the guns from these young guns. We call them young guns down here in Texas. How to get these guns from the young guns. And I certainly understand that. And my solutions in closing, my solutions is that we must pay attention to the long relationship between violence in place, and law enforcement, and how we administrate law enforcement in these communities. And you'd be surprised, gun violence is really concentrated in just small sets of disinvested communities. And you'd be surprised that within these neighborhoods, there are only small sets of, if you got streets, this street may be calm, guys fight over blocks, and this is our block, don't come on our block, this is our curb, don't come on our curb. So those micro geographic places like that, particularly on these streets, need to be targeted. And like you say, hold these politicians accountable to what happens, you know? And we have to because if we don't, we won't decrease violence within these neighborhoods. We could talk all day about what the parents going to do. Some parents just don't want to be parents. We have to just admit, some parents don't want to be parents. They let their kids come in at 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, and they don't care. As long as they ain't bothering me, I ain't bothering them.
And look at the population of CPS in Houston, Smokey. Look at the overcrowding of CPS. It just in Houston.
Well, the thing is, I know the overcrowding is, but where can most black families live? You live in Western Square apartments. You live in the Sunnyside apartments because of the credit issue, the felony conviction. All this stuff plays a factor in where we actually live. And the majority in Houston, they live in these projects that they just crime infested in some cases. So we have to really develop some type of comprehensive plan to address gun violence, setting aside maybe some violence interrupters in the community. And I'm going to tell you this before I sign off. In law enforcement, we used to have an issue with law enforcement officers shooting people who suffer from mental illness. We would come with top law enforcement officers and dealing with someone who's in a mental crisis. Now, what we do now is they have what they call a mental crisis team. If the person is not armed or maybe prone to violence or something, instead of police being dispatched, they dispatch the mental crisis team because of the increase of police shootings of people who were having mental episodes. So that has knocked out a whole lot of intervention from law enforcement to mental people who suffer mental illness issues to cut down on law enforcement shooting mental ill people, consumers. So, I mean, anything increasing community summer opportunities could help. The availability of counseling and wraparound services for these youth, that may help, but they have to want it. They have to want to come out. It's like a lady called me 3 weeks ago, said her daughter, who was 19 years old, was prosecuting. They were selling on Bissonnette. She's prostituting on Bissonnette, and she's 19 years old. So my answer was her. We can go and get her, but she is of age. She's not 16. She's not 17. She has to want to come off the streets. We can go out there and get her some wraparound services to try to help her, but they have to want to come off the streets. So these young kids gonna have to want to put the guns down. They don't have to want it. And I'll tell you this too, there's a fraction of kids who carry guns who are afraid to get caught without a gun. So that is a lot of factors at play in this focus on investments that we may try to do in the community interventions to treat the symptoms of violence, to transform some of these communities from violence. I appreciate you allowing me to come on after run now. I appreciate talking, Doc.
Thank you so much.
Hey, don't go. Smokey.
Yes.
Thank you, Captain Phillips. I really appreciate you taking the time off. And I really appreciate it. And you just be careful out there. I'm praying for y'all all the time. So thank you for your contribution to law enforcement and for all the years that you served. And we really appreciate it. It was a pleasure to have you on again.
Okay. Thank y'all so much. And I certainly appreciate the conversation.
Okay, Smokey, take care of yourself.
Okay.
Who's next with a solution?
I'll go ahead.
Can I get in here?
Okay, good. Sorry about it, Gene.
Yeah, I just want to say this, and that's a good question, Lou. You know, solutions. We got to come up with solutions to the problems that's plaguing our communities. Back on what Dr. Brantley was saying, this is a democracy. You know, this is a democracy. Well, actually, what we're living is a plutocracy. And democracy means equal access to participate into the process. Well, you know, you gave us access to the political process, but you didn't give us equal access to the money system and the money power. And as the police officer was saying, is that most of the crime happens in disinvestment communities. Well, we have to change that. We have to change the landscape of our communities, and we can do that. When Barack Obama left office doing an interview, he was asked the question, why didn't he do anything for black people? And his response was because black people didn't demand of anything. And that's the same thing we're dealing with today. We're not demanding of anything. There's 50 million of us here in America, and we're sitting on our hands and not making demands. And for us, the political process, in the words of Dr. King said that he didn't want socialism or capitalism, and he was looking for something new. We need a new paradigm. We need to rebirth leaders, rebirth new leaders, because the leadership that we have today, they're stuck on a conventional way of thinking. They've been taught in the schools of academia, they're operating on an old system that it's not working. We need a new party. We need a rebirth, a new culture. This is not our culture. We have really, as you said, Queen, we've lost our moral authority. You know, these are the days of decadence, and that's the day that we're living in, the day of decadence. It's the fall of an empire, you know. It's the fall of an empire. But I believe with everything that's in me that Asian people and people all over the world are waiting on descendants of American slaves to stand up. Even God, you know, he promised us the kingdom, but I believe he's sitting back saying, well, why would I give them the kingdom when they have not yet, you know, learned who they are? You know, he's waiting for us to stand up and demand, you know, what's rightfully due to us. I mean, we're not asking for a handout. And there's many, many ways. The whole institutions, all institutions, has to be institutions of change. But they will not do that unless people stand up and demand it. We have to address the monetary system, the policies, and we need a new paradigm. We need a whole new political party, because this one is just not going to do it. I don't care how much you vote, you know, how much you put faith in the system, there is going to remain the same unless the people outpowers the politicians. But they are just, you know, going along with the status quo, because we're not demanding of them or anything. But we have to change the monetary policy. That's number one. Until politicians is addressing the economic issues that's plaguing our community, until politicians address the inflation, you know, address the economic system, address the $30 trillion in national debt, the $100 trillion in total debt, the $3 trillion deficit. All crime and homicides and guns stem from that. Until they address those issues, no, you will not have my vote.
Can I jump
who
in?
Else have, yes, who else has the solution?
Yes, this is Brother Meeshorn again. I was able to get away from my meeting because I thought it was so important to put my words onto this. So everything I'm going to say has to do with men. Absolutely men. Not taking away from women. I appreciate my women. I think our women have done a great job up to this point. But moving forward, everything needs to be done by our men. So I got three things that I think is very important. And it started when I really got introduced to Dr. Norris Shelton when he wrote America's Little Black Book. The terminology that we use now, descendants of American slaves, American descendants of slaves, it was in his book, America's Little Black Book, he brought that terminology out. It was in that book that he revealed to me that I no longer accept being black. So the first thing we need to do, you know, everybody want to say we need to go to the economy. We need to go to the economic. No, the first thing we need to do in an economic society, in a capitalist society, is get off and being their black. We got to stop. We got to get off the color construct that this country put us in. So as long as you continue identifying, because I think it was Dred Scott, the judge says, in this country still, and we haven't even changed. Dred Scott, the judge, says that this country doesn't give a flip for anything, anyone black or slave, because this country was created for people or white people. Well, if you don't address that from the top first, that's what I do in my environment. I allow them to know that I'm not your black person. So we got to get off the color construct. That's one. Secondly, once we get off the color construct, then we have to use the terminology that they have made money off of. We got to be not afraid to call ourselves American descendants of slaves. Why? Because the economic, this country was built off of the back of slaves. Slaves is the economic number, and we need to be willing to go there. It's called an indemnity. You know, I'm an insurance agent guy. It says you have to be willing to address the indemnity to our demographics of people. An indemnity means that we can prove that this country done us wrong and caused us financial crisis. That's the second thing we must do through the political system, through the legislation. We must show the indemnity that this country done to our ancestors, not black people, slaves. We have to be willing to say that the demographics of people that they named as slaves, they done an injustice to, and because of that indemnity, we are their descendants in the 21st century, and because of that reason, you owe us not reparation. We got to stop using the wrong terminology. Reparation is for the people who did not get nothing, but this country invested all that slave money from the 15 slave states. They invested in the infrastructure. I'm an investment person. I understand business. If they invested that money into the infrastructure of this country, that means that they have made an inheritance. They invested that money. We have an inheritance. So, one, we have to get off the color construct. Two, we got to be willing to go after our inheritance by getting our name right. And then the third thing, I don't know what's wrong with men talking about they're afraid of guns. I am not afraid of guns. Guns is not our damn problem. Guns in the hands of children or men that don't know how to defend themselves is the problem. I got a good friend, brother, that I influence. He's now an instructor teaching young brothers how to fire arms and how to make sure to hold their guns and how to protect themselves. Man, when he did that, there are so many young brothers that's learning how to carry their guns and know how to handle themselves with a gun. So this idea that we need to control guns and get rid of guns, I don't agree with that, okay? I believe that we need to get a handle on our guns, and we need to know how to manage our guns so we know how to create a perimeter around our community, and the first place we need to know how to defend is ourselves, okay? When our children and our wives see that we're willing to get out there with the courage and defend their existence, then we send a message to everybody else, and then change will come.
Well, in a lot of aspects, I agree with that, because a nation will rise no higher than this woman. Go ahead, brother.
Say that again.
I'm sorry.
Queen, I'd like to throw something in.
No, I was saying that not that we won't need guns and ammunition. Let's build and own something. Then to protect it, we must have a military to protect it. That's obvious. You know, a military to protect our community, protect our property, and protect what we own. But first, we must own the community. And, you know, approaching these young brothers out here, you know, one brother told me, you know, about that's 4-4 Bud and this is 4-5 Bud and all that. I say, what part of that does you own? Buy it, own it, then claim it, then protect it.
First, ownership is learning how to be married. Learn how to be married. Learn how to build a home. Learn how to duplicate that in your children. And then when other people are willing to see that you have duplicated that, see, I believe in measurable results. I don't believe in just running your mouth and talking and saying. I believe that by example, okay? By example, you must show measurable results of that you're speaking of, okay? So home ownership is the first thing we must teach. No, marriage, the family, then home ownership, that build equity, those type of things we have to be willing. But that starts in the community. That don't start with getting the government to help us to do that. We have to do that ourselves. So, I'm just sorry. I believe this is very important that you must be an example of that you're talking about. So I believe marriage is very important. I believe
home ownership, and I believe being
an example of that. And that's
okay, wait a minute.
Those are my examples.
Wait a minute. Okay, because we almost out of time. I want to give Brother Vernon a chance to offer his solution. Did we lose him,
connection.
Brother Vernon? Okay, Brother Vernon, we can hear you. Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, wonderful, wonderful. All right, in the interest of time, I'm going to keep my suggestion short and to the point. My suggestion is that you commit. Whoever's listening to this, whoever's going to hear this, on the day that you hear this, 90 days, I'm going to ask you to do three things over the next 90 days. First and foremost, I'm echoing Brother Gene. Go to DAS4ESJ, D-A-S, number 4, ESJ.org. Register, join, you know, get on the list so you can stay informed. And for 90 days, do whatever you can to help him achieve what he is aiming to achieve through that platform. Thing number 1, do that for 90 days. Thing number 2, if you are looking for, as the just said, we're looking for examples, proven strategies that can work. I just spent this last weekend surrounded by thousands of men in the Nation of Islam who no longer have to look over their shoulders and worry about condemning their families, no longer have to worry about their women being unprotected, sisters who know that there are men who have their backs would kill and die for their protection. So for the next 90 days, whether you are a male or female, I'm asking you in whatever state or city you are in to find the Nation of Islam as led by Minister Louis Farrakhan, and for 90 days, you join in, pitch in, help, learn everything that you can, and for 90 days, walk in those shoes to make an impact in your community. Thing number 2, for 90 days, realize, I think Brother Gene said it, so many people have to spend their time chasing money. You don't have the time to focus on the children the way they need, to make an impact in your community the way it's needed, for anything else that's important, because you got to spend time chasing money. If tomorrow morning, if Monday morning, the only way that you can earn income is to get up and go to a job that you don't want to be at, you are doing it the wrong way. Proven examples of people on my team that I work with from Boston all the way down the East Coast to Georgia and all the way over as far as Texas have proven, have shown and proven that there is a better way. Thing number 3, work with me. Let's make something happen together. Get in contact with me because there is a way for your money to work for you instead of you working for your money. 3 things, 90 days. Make the commitment, and then after that, we will have no more excuses because we will have made the impact that we want to see. But if we don't do those 3 things, then you got to own up to the fact that I didn't do what I could have done in the last 90 days. So let's make something good happen. Those are my suggestions.
Thank you, Brother Vernon. And tell them how they can find you or contact you.
You can find me on social media. Look for Vernon Muhammad on Facebook. I'm Vernon Trader Logical Muhammad. On Twitter, I'm The High Road. But just go to my website. The website is Linktrees, linktr.ee/goldmasterplan. Linktree/goldmasterplan.
And can I give some information, I liked everything the brother said, but if you're not interested in any of those 3 things that he just said, then you can possibly get a hold of and Google me, Sean. I'm the founder of God's Lives Matter. You may not like my tactics, may not like, but I have proven that I have over 25 plus men who are married, doing successful, and following the influence of Uncle Michonne that's going to have a book coming out in the 2023 about I'm Not Your Black America. And you can follow me and Google me, spell my name correctly, M-E-S-H-O-R-E-N, and oh my God, yes, Uncle Michonne just spoke again.
Okay. All right. Okay, so of course, I'm going to tell you to follow me. you can follow me as Gidja Muhammad. You can follow Brother Gene. He's Brother Gene Gordon on Facebook. You can also go to our website, DAS, D as in David, A-S, the number 4, ESJ.org. We have 9 areas that you can work in. We have trade and commerce. We have health and human services. We have arts and, arts and crafts. We have
arts and culture.
Arts and crafts. Arts and culture. Thank you, Brother Vernon. excuse me. We have agriculture. There are just so many areas that you can make a difference in. But more than anything, let's make an economic difference in our lives. There's a way that we can do it. If you join them to the website, you'll get a lot of information. Brother Gene is going to start doing classes on YouTube very soon. There's a reason that you cannot access this information. We're going to be utilizing every aspect of social media to get this done. If you want a better future for yourselves and for your children, I'm telling you this is the way, because nobody is going to do it. If you want to know how to vote, you're going to have to learn how to look at policies. You're going to have to learn what these politicians are standing for. And I'm going to give the last word to Brother Gene. Because we didn't hear from him too much today, but we still got a little time. I mean, if I go over, I go over. I pay for it. But Brother Gene, come on and give us some marching orders going forward.
Yeah, as Brother Vernon was saying, you know, a 90-day goal is good, you know. But what we have to do is really we have to educate, and Dr. ESJ is taking an education approach first, and we have to become educated. There are some experts say that, you know, home ownership, you know, will begin to close the racial wealth gap in America. Now they come to find out that it's not. Home ownership will not close the racial wealth gap. We have to become and understand the capital ownership, become owners of capital. 98% to 99% of all the capital assets in America are owned by corporations, which are owned by Caucasian people. We have to change that. We as a people must begin to get into producer of goods and services. Capital is something that produces an income. Your house, capital. The car you drive is not capital. We have to get into producer of goods and services. And that's what DOSRI ESJ is all about. We're about educating people. Most of our businesses are geared around, you know, consumer goods and services, where the wealth is being produced by producer of goods and services. It makes no sense to have own land and it's not producing anything. So that's what DOSBESJ mission is to educate our people. And as I said, we have to rebirth new leaders. We have to birth new leaders with a new paradigm, coming with a whole new system to change the current conventional system. We have to become educated on what on a system. We can't be liberated by a system if we don't understand it. So that's what we're all about, is getting people to understand the system in which they're slaves under, and change the system. We're not looking to government for anything. When you talk about reparations, the root word of reparations is repair. Let's begin to repair the system first, because if they all gave us $100,000, $200,000 tomorrow, and if we don't understand the money system, then we'll be broke within 30 days. So let's try to repair the system. That's the first step in reparation, is repair the system, and particularly the money system must be changed.
All right. Okay. So I guess that's our show for today. I just pray that we were able to reach you. I hope that we were able to encourage you. I hope that we were able to inform you. And the thing about it is the word for today is action. You have to take action to change your life. We have an organization, and we have people that you've heard from today that are in the fight and that stay in the fight. And this is part of their everyday lives, but we're trying to get our people to another level. And we need you all to move. This whole series of radio shows, as I told you in the beginning, is called Let's Move. Because we got to move from the condition that we're in, and we cannot expect government to do this. Sit around and say the government's gonna give us stimulus, the government's gonna give us food stamps, the government's gonna give us welfare. Well, what the hell are you gonna give yourself? What are you gonna leave for your children? Do you want your children to go through what you're going through right now? And that the answer to that should be no. We got to instill hope and motivation in our children, and you have to have them side by side with you, showing them the way. Because they're not going to get it in school. They're not going to get it from higher institutions of learning. It's some stuff that schools are not going to teach them. They're not going to teach them about freedom, justice, and equality. They're not going to teach them true economics, not to benefit them. They're going to teach them how to get a job, work 30 years, retire, and die. And still, you have nothing to show for it and nothing to leave. We got to take action. So I pray that you are willing to do so for your own good and for the good of your families and from the good of your nation. If you want your babies to stop dying, then you need to take action today. Do something different. Cut the TVs off. Have a conversation. Ask your children what they're doing. Ask them, are they in gangs? Ask them, do they know? But if you want to help, do something simple, do something, one little something every day. What did Huey Newton say? He said, it only takes moving a grain of sand to change the world. Move your grain of sand today. May Allah bless you and keep you, and join us again next week for another topic. I thank all of my guests. I thank Brother Gene, Dr. Brandley, Brother Vernon, Captain Smokey Phillips, Brother Meshorn, and some other listeners that was on that I don't know who you are. People in the chat room, thank you so much. Thank you for your support, and we'll be back next week. One Nation, One Love. Good night, y'all.